At Farm to Table, we know how confusing healthcare is. We're here to simplify the healing process. We believe that healthcare should be simple. It should help people feel better. That's why we started the Table Talk podcast, to gather around the table with you, no matter where you are. We want to come and learn together and discuss a new healthcare approach that addresses the root cause of your symptoms. The journey for each person is unique, but together we can thrive. All right. Welcome to the Table Talk podcast. I'm so excited today because we are talking all about hormones. And so women's health is a big topic that we cover a lot. And we recently talked about menopause on the podcast with Dr. Carrie Jones. I'm still a little starstruck that she was willing to come onto our podcast because we're all like, oh my goodness, she's so smart and so well known in the functional medicine community. So that was awesome. So if you hadn't had a chance to listen to that podcast yet, please check out the menopause podcast, especially if that applies to you or a loved one. But today we are going to focus more on premenopausal women and women that should be cycling regularly and really just balancing hormones because our hormones play so much of a role in all kinds of different areas of our body. So I have with me today two of our pharmacists. I'm going to have you guys introduce yourselves. So Katie, why don't you get started?
Sure. My name is Dr. Katie Johnstone. I am in Portland, Maine. And hormones are kind of my thing. I'm very interested in this area. I think it's missing a lot in traditional medicine. So I'm excited to talk about this today.
Awesome. Thank you. And then Marina?
Yes. And I am Marina Buksov. I am an herbal and holistic pharmacist. I've studied herbalism, and it's one of my favorite things to talk about. So I'll bring that side of things in today. And of course, being a woman and working with women, this is a very, very common and important topic that I'm passionate about.
Awesome. Thank you so much. So we're just going to get started with a conversation that like most women that go to, you know, they have issues with whether it's PMS issues, issues with their cycle, fatigue issues. And a lot of women I find in their 20s to 40s, like don't always have a primary care provider, even though we should. They're going to their OB for their annual visits, getting those things checked out. But sometimes like that women's healthcare piece, the OB is doing the good job and what they were trained and for screening for cancer. And, you know, all of those things that they need to be doing, but they're not necessarily providing that holistic approach to looking at hormones. So a lot of times if someone's having trouble, like the first answer is, okay, well, you can go on birth control. That's going to regulate your cycles. But in reality, that's not actually regulating anyone's hormones. It's actually just like telling your body to stop producing hormones and we're replacing it with a synthetic progestin and estrogens. So we want to make sure that women who do want to pursue a natural approach to hormone balance have the right information to go off of. And there are so many amazing tools now. I talked about this on the podcast with Carrie, but the Oura Ring is one, and maybe we didn't talk about it, but we've talked about it before on the podcast, but where you can even measure your like basal temperatures now throughout the month and track your cycles with another app called Natural Cycles. And so you have these tools literally on your finger. So it's like at your fingertips, right? But you have those tools so close and available to help monitor things, help monitor your stress levels. So those are always cool. But I wanted to start off by just sort of talking about some of the symptoms that women experience when hormones are in balance. So the two sort of main female hormones that we're going to talk about are progesterone and estrogen. And progesterone and estrogen have to be in balance to really help people feel, you know, feel their optimal health and wellness. And so we're also going to dive in a little bit to testosterone and DHEA because those are also hormones and also important for females as well. But first, just starting with progesterone. So progesterone is a hormone that's secreted after ovulation by the ovaries. So it can be made in the placenta and adrenal glands as well, but it primarily regulates the condition of the endometrial lining. So when we are having that endometrial lining growth over the course of the month, it's regulating that. And so if we have too much estrogen and not enough progesterone, we can have really heavy cycles, heavy periods. And so we want to make sure those are balanced because heavy periods can equate to then losing too much blood and iron deficiency and all of those other things. But estrogen regulates the growth and development and physiology of the reproductive system. It's primarily produced in the ovaries in premenopausal women and sometimes from circulating androgens in postmenopausal women. So sometimes testosterone can convert to estrogen through a process called aromatization. But the biological actions of estrogen are mediated by binding to estrogen receptors in all kinds of organs in the body. We even have estrogen receptors in our gut. So when we have too much estrogen or not enough estrogen, we can have symptoms. Same thing with low progesterone. So what are some symptoms of low progesterone? One is we can get, again, those high estrogen things happening. We can also have anxiety and sometimes infertility because we don't have the proper endometrial lining available for that person. But then also the cycle can be shortened, which would cause issues with the fertility part as well. Insomnia is a big thing. If we think about the progesterone being higher in the second half of the cycle after ovulation, because again, it's secreted after ovulation, there's a lot of women that cyclically have insomnia. So maybe just those right after ovulation till their period, they may have, or closer to the period time, may have trouble sleeping or more anxious during that time. So those can be signs that progesterone is low. And then also irritability. So irritability can be something that happens, you know, because of the low progesterone and the neurotransmitter component, and even PMS. So PMS can be signs of the low progesterone. So those are some kind of symptoms that you might experience if you have low progesterone. If you have low estrogen, this can be, you know, some of the symptoms can be bone loss. So we can have weak bones, which is another reason why in the podcast, when we talked to Dr. Jones, we talked about estrogen replacement, because that helps to make sure that we have good bone mass, especially when we do that in that first 5 years postmenopausal. But we want to make sure that while we're cycling, that we have enough estrogen to really solidify those bones, that we're not losing bone earlier, because that's going to increased risk for osteoporosis if we don't have good amounts of estrogen during this crucial time where estrogen is at its peak. And then low estrogen also can contribute to hot flashes. It can also contribute to insomnia. So if it's thinking about like those even perimenopausal, menopausal symptoms, some of those correlate here, but some women can experience these even sooner if those estrogen levels aren't optimal. Low sex drive, night sweats, vaginal dryness. Some women postpartum that are breastfeeding, when these hormones are suppressed during breastfeeding, can experience some of these low estrogen symptoms. And sometimes it's as easy as using some topical estrogen vaginally to help with some of those symptoms. But then on the other hand, we have high estrogen symptoms. And so high estrogen symptoms sometimes are just because we have too much estrogen in general, or sometimes because we have the low progesterone relative to the normalish estrogen level. So those high estrogen symptoms can be acne, dysmenorrhea, menorrhagia, which is, you know, those heavy bleedings, the irregular periods. And then we also can have mood issues, sometimes can have tenderness in the breast. So if you have a lot of breast tenderness before your period, that can be a sign that estrogen is imbalanced. And also weight gain. So there's lots of connections with estrogen, weight gain, sort of that abdominal weight that people can gain. So those are some of the symptoms of imbalance. And so we just want to talk a little bit about really being able to test for those. So Marina, do you want to talk about testing?
Yeah. I mean, I'll just add that the role of estrogen is actually to thicken the lining of the uterus. Yes. And the progesterone maintains it so that pregnancy, yes, can happen. And throughout pregnancy, progesterone levels should be elevated. And the reason why we have the heavy, painful period sometimes when there's estrogen dominance is because that lining is thick, because there, mm-hmm, estrogen was growing it, and now the uterus has to work harder to contract and get that out. And we have all kinds of growths associated with high estrogen conditions, including cancer, including cysts or fibroids or endometriosis. So kind of abnormal growths. And the most important thing is, like you said, Melody, that it's all about the balance of the estrogen to progesterone.
Right. Awesome. Yeah. And then as far as like measuring the levels, there's a couple different things that we can do. One is serum levels. So serum is probably the gold standard in a way in the medical community of measuring where your progesterone is, your estrogen is, your estradiol. We can measure it just a lab, general lab. We can look at total estrogens, estradiol, estriol. We can look at progesterone. We do like to use something called progesterone LCMS, which is a specific type of methodology for measuring progesterone, which is most accurate when progesterone starts to get low. So we can be more accurate in those low, especially when patients have low symptoms. But sometimes we just start with the blood work as a place to start. The challenge with blood work is that we are only testing one point in time. So if we didn't nail that, you know, you're right after ovulation, we know you're in the luteal phase, you know, right at the time, like you don't want to go to blood work like five times in a cycle, right? To like figure out where everything is. So especially if your cycle is irregular, sometimes blood work is challenging, just knowing exactly what we're looking at and what point in the cycle that person is in. Generally, we try to send them date if they're on a 28 day type cycle, day 19 to 21. But if the patient has a longer cycle or has a shorter cycle, we try to adjust that, but still it's somewhat of a guess in a way of where you're going to be. So that's always important if you are being asked to get hormones drawn, that you're, you know, being, you ask your provider when they would like you in your cycle to do that. And for people that aren't cycling, you know, in that case, it doesn't really matter, right? If we're not having a period at all, we're just going to sort of go assess that and see what we see from those. But then there's also saliva hormone testing, which is one option. I will say it's probably not the most common option that we use. We either use the blood or we do dried urine. So dried urine is well correlated with the blood samples. And while we do have one point in time dried urine that we try to target, that day 19 to 21 point, we also have the option with urine of doing a throughout the month sample. And then they can sort of pick the time that was the highest point of estrogen and progesterone to do the rest of our testing on, which includes other markers like estrogen detoxification or androgens and cortisol. So it gives us a way to look at the whole month if we want, especially in people that have irregular cycles. So it's not actually measuring estrogen itself. It's measuring estrogen metabolites. But again, those have been strongly correlated with the actual estrogen level. Same thing with progesterone, measuring the progesterone metabolites, because that what's exiting your body in urine is not the actual full hormone. It's broken down mainly in the liver, but also in the gut and other places. All right. So Katie, do you want to talk to us a little bit about testosterone in women?
Sure. Yeah. So I think people think testosterone, they immediately go to men and think that's like the primary hormone in men, but it's really important in women for muscle mass and for energy levels, for libido, and it naturally decreases with age. I think I saw something where between your 20s and mid 40s, it goes down by 50%. I see it a lot too in women that used to be really high, you know, high energy, high exercise tolerance, and then they really feel like they're just crashing. And another important hormone is DHEA. So that's a primary androgen hormone, and it's produced in the adrenals as well as the ovaries and the testes. And so when testosterone levels are low, I think, you know, the DHEA will be low as well. And a primary reason for that is stress. So your adrenals will take over production of DHEA, and it will help balance the effects of cortisol.
So we talk about stress all the time on all the podcasts. And so, you know, you think of it, since it is produced in the adrenal gland, it makes sense that that's what would cause that.
Sure. Yeah. And then, so some of those low testosterone symptoms, like you said, the low energy, low sex drive, low muscle mass, there's also sometimes brain fog and mood issues surrounding that. And sometimes the belly fat. So even we think about belly fat being men with low testosterone, we also see that in women. And then we also, with the high testosterone on the other side of things, can see acne, body hair, facial growth, similar to, we've talked about PCOS on the podcast before, which is polycystic ovarian syndrome. So those patients often have, not always, but sometimes have higher levels of testosterone, higher levels of free testosterone that sort of have those androgen type symptoms. So those are, you know, pieces to consider too when we're looking at lab assessments with hormones. The nice thing about lab assessment for testosterone and DHEA is we don't have to worry as much about where you are in your cycle to do those type of labs. So those are a little bit easier to draw via blood work, but also important to look at the whole picture, like Katie said, of the connection between cortisol and your adrenal glands and your DHEA production and all of that is helpful when we look at the dried urine, because we can see metabolites of all of those things. And some like root causes of testosterone also, like low zinc levels, which zinc is a mineral that many people are deficient in. Diabetes can contribute to low zinc levels because insulin production needs zinc. We talk a lot. I taught my students about zinc and pre-diabetes yesterday. So there's lots of correlations there. And then if people have their surgically removed ovaries, certainly that plays a role in affecting testosterone levels as well as the other hormones. So anyways, when patients come to us and we find there is an imbalance, then that's when we're helping them. For premenopausal women, we don't jump straight to hormone like replacement, because in a premenopausal female, the problem is not that they're lacking the ability to produce the hormone in most cases. So many cases, it's that their stress response, they're in this like constant state of stress that their body is not in this, you know, let's prepare for a healthy child state, because it thinks it's running from a bear, even though that is perceived stress oftentimes and not physical stress that they're undergoing. And so we really have to affect the start of this point in the brain. So when we think about how these hormones are produced, it starts with signals from the brain that then go and tell, you know, the different target organs in the body what to send. So I don't know, do you want to talk a little bit about that stress imbalance part, Marina, as far as like how someone can rebalance, or ways that you work with your patients to rebalance that stress response?
Yeah. And I also wanted to mention that stress also causes us to produce more cortisol, also at the stake of progesterone. So that could be contributing to the higher estrogen dominance states.
Sure. Yeah. They used to call it like progesterone steal, but it's not really like stealing it. It's the fact that we're just like shunting our energy. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, stress is at the root cause of many, many disease states. And so sleep is something that I focus on to make sure that we are, again, replenishing and restoring the body's ability to, number one, detoxify with the liver. Number two, again, make sure your brain is working optimally on enough sleep. Number three, immune system and all the hormone cascades. Like they really, really, number one, depend on getting good sleep. It's so, so important and missed. Mm-hmm. And number two, from an herbal perspective, I love to use adaptogenic herbs, which help us manage our stress better. One way is, how can we avoid stress, right? But stress is just like a normal part of life. So we just have to find a way to deal with the stress. So outside of lifestyle changes and mindset work, I really love herbal adaptogens. And some of them also help with balancing the circadian rhythm too. So if somebody is continually having a difficulty not only falling asleep, but staying asleep or waking up during odd hours of the night, then adaptogens can really be helpful so that you have enough energy, or you feel like you have more energy and like a better mindset, and are able to cope with stress better during the daytime, and then are better able to rest during the nighttime. So things like ginseng, right? Probably everybody's heard of that. And then a milder form of Asian ginseng is Eleuthero, which I really like, or American ginseng, because Asian ginseng can be a little bit strong for some people, and it's also quite expensive. And there could be some adulteration sometimes with Asian ginseng. So it's really important to see where your source is coming from. So that's why I usually like American ginseng, Eleuthero, ashwagandha. You've all probably heard of these things, and they really do work, but you have to take them consistently for them to work. It's not something that you can pop, you know, a tea or a pill form of this herb and feel great for the rest of your life. It's something that you build up over time. Yeah. And as you're taking it consistently, it really does help rebalance your hormones and your ability to deal with stress.
Sure, sure. And I think the cool thing about that dried urine test that we do is that it has the cortisol element on it. And they were really the first to, like, the gold standard for cortisol testing prior to this test was saliva cortisol testing, which is, you know, it's there, but I mean, if you guys, I don't know if you guys have ever done it. I've done the saliva testing, but it's really hard to get enough spit in those tubes throughout the day. So sometimes that can be challenging for patients, but in the urinary, you know, we don't have any problems with that side of things. And it can give us a good picture of the cortisol. Saliva is still probably the gold standard as far as looking at the cortisol awakening response 30 minutes after you wake up, to know like how your HPA axis function or that stress response function is doing. And so we can combine the urine and the saliva. But even just seeing like the overall cortisol picture with patients with the dried urine, the cortisol pattern can really give us some insight into, you know, are they really on that super low cortisol spectrum, or are they on the spectrum where they're more on the high end, and what kinds of herbal supplements or nutrients do we use to help them? And then also, Marina said sleep is so huge, but even things like acupuncture, I find to be really effective for patients. It was one of my tools when I had, so I had my daughter in 2014 and then breastfed her for like a little over a year and then didn't have another cycle for like another 8 or 9 months. And I was like, okay, well, if I'm going to have another kid, you know, that's not too far away from this kid, I probably should figure out what's going on here and other symptoms and things that we're experiencing because of low hormones. So I did blood work and my hormones were like basically like postmenopausal levels. And my doctor at the time, one of the doctors, integrative doctor up in the Cleveland, Ohio area, said, yeah, you're not going to get this back unless you do acupuncture. And I was like, what? Like no one, that's not like an answer like I was expecting. Certainly I was starting herbal things, Chase Tree, which Marina can probably fill us in more on for like helping regulate cycles and progesterone support. But acupuncture, like I started the herbs and the acupuncture and within like 2 months had my cycle back. So sometimes it's just really like amazing to see some of these integrative things and how they can work together for our patients. And then I use acupuncture a lot. And obviously I'm not giving the acupuncture, but my colleagues in the area, I refer a lot to acupuncture for my patients. So that's definitely helpful with the stress. Another thing with stress is the deep breathing and the mindfulness, which we've talked a lot about on the podcast. Katie, what are your favorite sort of go-to resources for patients that you're trying to get like deep breathing and mindfulness into their routine? Yeah.
I mean, there's a million apps for everything. I like Inside Timer. Inside Timer is good. And, you know, just general like box breathing where you inhale for 5, hold for 5, exhale 5, hold. And that can be done anywhere. You don't need an appointment. You don't need to pay anything. You can literally just sit in your car in between going from work to home, you know, working on like the transition parts of your day. Because sometimes you just go from one phase to the next and you carry your stress from work into home and just taking time to sit for a minute and do some deep breathing, going for walks, getting out in the sun. And even if it's a nor'easter like it is here in Maine, whenever it's safe. But yeah, I think connecting back to nature too is important.
Yes, very true. Yeah, that nature connection is huge. And it's so hard in the winter in the northern half of the United States. Basically, the stress affects our hypothalamus, and then that affects our pituitary gland, which then sends the signals to the adrenal gland to produce these hormones. And so, you know, we want to make sure that, you know, we get that process under control, because otherwise we're going to have challenges with balancing the sex hormones as well.
Yeah. And if you think about it, stress is, or how we respond and perceive to stress, is telling our body to go into fight or flight, sympathetic overdrive mode. So in that mode, it definitely does favor us to go get our adrenals, you know, hyped up, get ready for some action or to flee. But it doesn't tell our body that it's safe. And that if you don't feel safe and you don't have enough resources, you can't rest and digest, and you can't sleep, and you can't reproduce, right? Because if you don't have safety for your own body, you can not grow another human being or not conceive and not be able to sustain the progesterone levels up.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I think this like phase of life too is we are starting to like hopefully move away from all the people pleasing. I call it like the disease to please, because you're constantly putting yourself last, especially if you are a mom and maybe you have like a teenager going through puberty or something, and you're going through your own hormonal changes. So it's important to learn to say, you know, no, and put yourself first. I mean, sometimes I tell my patients to just take 15 minutes to do you, like be by yourself, even if you have to shut the door, lock the door in the bathroom, and just spend time alone, because, you know, you find yourself at the end of the day, you did everything for everybody and you're totally depleted.
Marina, can you talk to us a little bit about some, like if people have the low progesterone picture where they're having that luteal phase dysfunction, can you tell us more about Chase Tree or Vitex as it's referred to, and sort of where you see that utility?
Yeah, so this is also called monk's berry or fruit or pepper.
It's like, all kinds of names.
Yeah, it's like very spicy and pungent if you taste it. I've seen the tree and tasted the berry. And it's such a special plant because of this application that I personally associate with progesterone. You know, it's like the supreme progesterone tonic. And it's got a few different applications at different doses. So the reason it was called monk's pepper is because at very, very low doses, say one berry a day, it actually decreases progesterone and libido. Mm. And at the regular doses, clinical doses that we've studied and that we use in supplement form, or I personally like tinctures, you could also do a tea, though I don't prefer that for the, you know, clinical doses. But kind of like the middle dosing strategy is what supports your optimal progesterone levels so that you can keep the lining, you can get more fertile, you can start to establish a balance between estrogen and progesterone. And at the really high doses, I haven't had clinical success with this yet, but theoretically, it could affect the dopamine balance, right? Because there's also a relationship between the in the hypothalamus, dopamine and progesterone and prolactin. And so that's kind of a theoretical application that I'm still kind of researching. But the most commonly used dose is for helping us in relation to estrogen to balance out our progesterone through the function of the hypothalamus and the feedback mechanism that happens, and to make sure there's more positive feedback going on between that and progesterone.
Awesome. It seems like, I mean, it's been used like how many years? I mean, predates probably a lot of our modern fertility interventions. So it's amazing to see the stories of women. I mean, if you're out there in the blogosphere and you're looking at fertility, I'm sure you've come across that particular herb. But then there's also an herb that works more in the brain as well called maca that has some adaptogen type benefits as well. To me, I associate, and Marina can correct me if I'm wrong, I associate that with more of like an overall hormone, like supporting all of the hormones, which I did find to be a little bit problematic in some of my PCOS patients, contributing to like maybe like increase in testosterone slightly, probably not like a significant amount, but maybe worsening acne and things in patients that might be on that spectrum. But do you have any experience with using maca in any of your patients?
Yeah, so this is a starchy root vegetable, and the traditional use has been like an overall adaptogen, and it is more like associated with like stimulating the thyroid a little bit for those hypothyroid functions, which could also be at the root of some of these disbalances. So in that way, it can be helpful for metabolizing, and it can be helpful also for men with building up their stamina and their testosterone. But again, yeah, if you do have a picture of PCOS, you have to correct both the testosterone and the estrogen in relationship to progesterone. So it might not be the best herb for that, but it I like it for people who are, you know, kind of under functioning or fatigue kind of picture, weak, debilitated. And I feel like it's gently stimulating is how I would describe it, and more nutritive than anything else.
Sure. Yeah, it's probably not something you want to take right before bed with that little bit of stimulation. But yeah, so that's definitely something to consider. And I've seen success with women like that aren't cycling at all, having like regular cycles after like 3 or 4 months of using that product. But sort of like what Marina was saying before, like these aren't things that we can just like take 1 week and expect to like fix the problem. It's really just helping support and providing your body with the nutrients and that balance in the hormones to really get things back in order.
And it also tastes really good. I use the powder. I mix it either in oatmeal or in hot chocolate, and it's a really good tasting herb. So
the hot chocolate. Well, that's cool. Good to know. I should get my husband drinking some maca hot chocolate. He probably doesn't need any hot chocolate though. Yeah. He's not a coffee drinker. So in the winter, it's always like, you know, I'm going to have a warm cup of something, but he doesn't like coffee or tea. So
I actually wanted to bring up gut health and estrobolome as well.
Yes.
So the way estrogen is metabolized is via the liver, and it gets conjugated with a glucuronidation process to test out, right? And if there's a disbalance in the gut, there's dysbiosis, or if you've taken an antibiotic, it can upregulate some of the bacteria that actually goes back and cleaves estrogen back out of the targeted pathway to get eliminated. And so the beta glucuronidases get upregulated, and you have more estrogen, you know, shunted back into the bloodstream with the hepatic recirculation. So it's very important to also focus on gut health and liver health when we're talking about hormone regulation.
Absolutely. And we talked a little bit about that on the menopause podcast, so which is still prevalent to our premenopausal women. And I think because you get that estrogen recycling, especially in these women with constipation, we'd start to see this estrogen dominant picture. And certain bacterial strains, if they're missing or too much of a certain bacteria in the gut, can really affect how the estrogen's getting out. So the first step to hormone balance, making sure you're pooping and making sure you're, you know, having a balanced microbiome too. Yeah, that whole estrobilome, or however they're saying it, I feel like it's gonna be like the buzzword of women's health over the next couple years. The other thing to consider is toxins. And so we didn't talk a lot about this yet, but there are xenoestrogens in beauty products, in plastics, in different types of things in our environment, pesticides, that basically sort of mimic estrogen. And so they can contribute to having this estrogen dominant picture, even without maybe like a actual estrogen being dominant. So we might experience some of these symptoms. So it's always really important to clean up, you know, if we're trying to pursue optimal health, pursue thriving, we do want to clean up, you know, the products that we're putting on our bodies, whether that's lotions or makeup or even some of the other personal care things. Anybody else, you want to say anything about that, Katie?
Yeah, I think that's something that's missed a lot. Maybe they're focusing on their diet and getting colorful, protein-rich foods in, but then putting 50 products on their face that are contributing to estrogen kind of overload on the liver. So, yeah.
The part that's hard for me is shampoo, because I should go take a picture of my shower and send it to you, because I have like 20 bottles of shampoo because I try all these like natural things and it like doesn't work. And then I'm like back to square one, but then I never like get rid of the bottle. I just need to just like go pass them out on the street. Like, here, try this. But so if you guys, I mean, I've tried the beauty counter. I've tried this. I've tried that.
I like beauty counter.
You know, okay. Well, I just can't, like, my hair's so thin that I feel like if I don't have the actual like clean up, you know, sudsy, you know, like the real shampoo, like it just doesn't get it clean enough. And then I look like I have like, you know, not washed my hair. So I still am looking for that perfect natural shampoo, which is a funny thing is because people find our website because there's this farm to table shampoo on Amazon, which I need to look at the ingredients and see if they're actually clean and try it, because people contact us all the time saying like about selling our shampoo and like, we don't have shampoo.
Yeah. Maybe, so maybe if you're good, you can become an ambassador or something.
Yeah. There we go. Maybe we can. Sure. Yeah. So, and we can sell it on our store. Yeah. So the other thing I wanted to mention is there are some like supplements/dietary approaches to help lower estrogen. So the cruciferous vegetable family helps to provide the resources for the body to metabolize estrogen better. And so certainly increasing those in your diet is ideal, and making sure that you have a good amount. Challenge being that at the doses that we would need to really influence the estrogen levels in people that have really high estrogen, I'm assuming progesterone is okay. You know, you might have to eat like a lot of broccoli and Brussels sprouts, and like probably more than someone can even like physically eat at times. So that is a place that we do add in some of those supplements. One of those is called DIM, and that is dienolyl methane, which is basically a phytochemical found in the cruciferous vegetables, but just like isolated. And so that can help the body get the estrogen out in the right pathway. For some people, that's a little bit too strong, and we may not want to use it over a long period of time, because again, we don't want to cause your estrogen to be too low, because we need it to build bones and we need, you know, the important effects that estrogen has. But there are products that also just have like concentrated forms of like whole broccoli extracts or Brussels sprouts or things like that, that you can use. There's one like that's just a bunch of phytonutrients to help support the microbiome that has some broccoli and some of this and some of that, pomegranate, things like that, that support the microbiome. So there's different options there. I personally don't tolerate DIM super well, so I use one of those more food-based supplements. But Marina, is there anything on the herbal end besides sort of those whole food based things that you think about for like helping balance estrogen?
Yes. So I also want to point out that the xenoestrogens are actually more powerful than estrogen. Yes. They bind more powerfully and their effects are more toxic than, you know, if you were to have an elevated form of your own estrogen, and they're attached to the receptor for longer. Mm-hmm. And so we definitely want to focus on clearing those out, and that might actually solve the problem on its own. And I really take a strong stand against plastics, because you were mentioning plastic, and, you know, water bottles is something that's everywhere now, right? Water bottles, especially when they heat up, we don't know how they were transferred. So the number one advice here is still to try to avoid getting into contact with those, because, you know, our food is wrapped in it. You know, it's like literally everywhere, and we're touching it.
Receipts have BPA.
Yeah, and we're touching it, and it's lipophilic, so we could even absorb it through the skin, which a lot of people don't realize. So just touching plastic all the time, you know, and we have our kids constantly playing with plastic toys from when they're babies, or they make plastic water bottles for babies. So I really don't understand what's going on in the consumer market, and there still needs to be a lot of advocacy for this. So number one is try to avoid plastic as much as possible, especially for kids, but also for adults and for pregnant women. Number two is, from the herbal approach, actually there's a type of compound called the phytoestrogen that will balance out your estrogen levels. So if you have a lots of xenoestrogens or estrogen dominance, this type of compound is a weaker sort of estrogen binder, and it will average out and compete for those binding sites. So this will lower the overall estrogen burden on the body. And conversely, in perimenopause and menopause, when we actually want to upregulate the estrogen because we're on the low end, it will actually do the same and average it upwards. So I love phytoestrogens. My favorite, one of my favorites, is red clover. And it also gently moves the lymphatic system, which is also really important in clearing out toxins and for our immune system, and also getting rid of like those blockages that I mentioned, where there could be like certain growths or fibroids or cysts, and red clover is wonderful for all of those things. And then there's more powerful lymph movers too that you might want to consider, like figwort or burdock root. Calendula is wonderful. And then I also wanted to briefly mention, so if you are also trying to get pregnant, there's lots of other herbs besides what we already mentioned for progesterone. So the Vitex is one that we mentioned, and then Michella or partridge berry is another one, and red raspberry leaf. So I just wanted to give them a shout out here too. And getting back to the perimenopause, one of my most wonderful supreme tonics for the female reproductive tract during the peri and menopause times is shatavari, the Indian asparagus, right? And it's also a root, and it's very supremely moistening, and it supports the yin concept in Chinese medicine. So it basically helps us get more lubrication and more, again, a little bit gentle stamina for the female. And it's warming, and it also is a gentle adaptogen. So I love adding that in.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks for that. I didn't know that red raspberry leaf tea was helpful in fertility. I knew, and women will still drink it like second and third trimester to help make sure their uterine health, I guess, is healthy, and like contraction. Like, doesn't it help with labor?
Yeah.
Like improve labor outcomes? Yeah.
So it's astringent. So it's considered, and it has an affinity for the uterus. So what it's considered to do is like, quote unquote, tone the uterus. So think about it as like,
that's the word I was looking for.
It's helping with the muscle type, the smooth muscle that is in the uterus, and it helps that contractions be more effective. So it's actually helpful in estrogen dominance as well, when we're trying to help the uterus have more effective contractions to get that extra lining out, as I was mentioning.
Yeah.
So it's good for, you know, painful periods and cramps. It's good for as a partus preparatum herb. So whether it's before labor, before pregnancy, during pregnancy, right before labor, and then postpartum, to get the tone of uterus now back from a stretched position to its normal size.
Yeah. And all those terrible cramps. Oh, they don't tell you about that when you, when you're pregnant, they don't tell you about the after, none of the after, but yes, that would have been helpful information. Do you, with the non-pregnant patients that are using it, is it tea still, or do you use tinctures, or how do you typically incorporate the red raspberry leaf?
there's supplements, there's tinctures, there's tea. I personally prefer the tea form, and it tastes a little bit like black tea. So
yeah,
it's also kind of light and fluffy. So I feel like it's a really good base for any other tea that you make. And that's what I like. But yes, you can do tincture as well. The problem with tincture during pregnancy is that it has alcohol. So you probably would not want to do that.
Right, right. Makes sense. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, my husband was surprised when I've just had like a pre-made one in the bags or whatever. When I was pregnant, I think he thought it was going to actually taste like raspberry because we had other like raspberry teas. He was like, this is not raspberry tea. I'm like, that is not yours.
Yeah. It's not the berry. It's the leaf.
So the leaf. Yes. Red raspberry leaf. Yes. But it does taste sort of like green or black tea, like not too crazy. So you can add a little honey to it to sweeten it if you need to. But awesome. Well, thank you guys so much. I think this was a great discussion on hormone balance. I mean, just to highlight some of the things we talked about, testing is really important, whether you're testing blood as a starting place or using a more comprehensive test like what we talked about, the dried urine test, which Dutch is the name of that test. There is also a new one from, so Dutch is Precision Analytical, and there's also a new one, Doctor's Data, that has some similarities, but that allows us to look at, you know, urinary cortisol metabolites, the hormone metabolites, plus it looks at those detoxification components. So like in my practice, anybody that we have on hormone therapy, I want to do that test once a year to make sure they're detoxifying their estrogen properly. And then we also talked about stress and the gut and so many lifestyle modifications that often we need to work on to balance these hormones. Nutrition, we didn't hit a lot on nutrition, but not having our blood sugar on a roller coaster is going to be really important to balancing hormones as well, which we talk about a lot. So lots of things to think about for women out there balancing hormones. But if you need someone to help coach you through that process and help order some of these labs and get you back on track, you guys know where to find us. We're at farmtotable, PharmTotable.life. And then you can click find a provider and search for one in your state. So again, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. We're excited you are on your journey with us. Find us online at farmtotable.life, farm with a P, and on Instagram at farmtotableteam.